cliffcentral.com. Welcome to the Futurology Show, proudly sponsored by MTN Business. Hello, B2.
Hey, everyone.
What's up?
No, you got me off guard with the first question. No, sorry. All good, bro. It's very cool. It's another week. I keep saying how long the days are and how short the weeks are, and it just feels like we did this yesterday.
I know. But, well, we did. No, we didn't. No. Well, it depends if there was a Hyperloop or time continuum or
relative,
one of those things. I did see you, though, in between there. That's why.
Yeah.
So I think, obviously.
I didn't have time to miss you.
Yeah, you see, there we go.
Anyway.
So, as per always, app of the week. And I'm actually going to hand this one over to you because you found it. And
yes.
I've played with it, but I think you're more of an expert on it than I am because I'm still playing. So the app's called Quick.
Yes.
Q-U-I-K, no C. So
Q-U-I-K.
Thank you. See, I can't even name it properly. So take us through Quick.
So the cool thing about Quick, for anybody that is a video editor or any sort of fanatic around sharing memories and moments, Quick is the GoPro video editing app that is free. No in-app purchases. And it's freaking awesome.
That does sound cool.
It is. It's designed for guys with your GoPro and you've got all your footage and you don't really have a space to place it and you want to share it, but you don't just want to put up a raw video. You want to do something with it. So this allows you to collate your videos and your pictures, I might add. So I've made a collection of my wedding photos and I've made a better video using the Quick app than my videographer did that I paid for. And I did it in 20 minutes. It was done. You've got looks and feels, you've got title graphics, you've got a library of music in the back end, and it literally all works on your phone. It's really seamless. Most people should be able to get it, so if you're thick and it's not so quick.
Okay, so that wasn't an attack at me. That's fine.
But it's cool. I can help you with it.
I'm
if
new,
you need.
Though. I mean, you only told me about this like on Saturday or Sunday.
But the thing is, you got the idea of what it was, and
you can add
stuff in.
And it makes stuff. I mean, it does. Just, you just put photos, and then it kind of makes it.
So the one thing that I thought was quite interesting is it comes out and every new video you've got the Quick player graphic as a tail ender of all your videos. And I was like, oh, this is a bum. I'm going to have like made by Quick player or Quick editor every single time I share. But no, they give you the option straight out of the app to actually delete it if you don't want it. So if you want to promote it and go put something into the GoPro space and say, I made this on my GoPro and it's great. Made by Quick Play GoPro. And then they'll put it in their library. That's great. But if you just want to share a family video and not have that at the end, delete.
Okay,
and it's
so
really
you
cool.
Do know that
made
if they're listening,
people, yeah,
they're going to change that, so you can't.
No,
do that.
But it's fantastic because now more people are going to adopt it. Whether you have a GoPro or not, you're going to adopt it. It works with your phone, it works with your device. But now they've got an active market knowing that GoPro are doing this, so now I'm more likely to look at a GoPro. It's pretty clever and sort of like we were talking about last time. Everybody tells a story. This enables you to tell your stories, but now they're helping you enable. So enablement and things worth sharing is what brands are starting to do. I hope.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I tell you, you know, I use Google Photos as my photo
and there's
storage.
Apple, there's Apple Memories,
and they do
and
the same
well.
Thing. Yeah. They like take stuff and they make a video, like your journey at the beach or whatever, and it's quite cool. And then it also top and tails, you know, puts in some music, and that was a cool
this
thing. There was
better.
Actually a music library,
yes,
that was on there. It's obviously royalty free and all that kind of stuff.
And
so
you can add your own
cool.
music, and if you haven't bought that music, it'll verify it and say you haven't got this, so we're not going to do it. And if there are any rights issues, it does it for you in the app as well. It's actually quite a powerful little app. So check it out, Quick.
Okay.
Q U I K.
As I look at it now, Quick or Quick? It's called Quick.
Quickly.
Quick. Okay. Cool. Lekker. So moving on, I love this.
Yes.
Okay. I found something called Sesame Enable. Now, you know the old, who was it? Alibaba and the 40 Thieves, Open Sesame, you know, right? So it's that sesame, not like the seeds that you eat. And the idea is that it's an app that uses voice commands and the phone's front-facing camera to let people that are paraplegics control their smart devices. So basically, the last, 7 years or so, all phones have gone touch. You know, everything's touch.
Yeah.
If you can't use your arms and your legs, you can't touch. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we've seen guys with like things in their mouths and they can touch screens. They can blink. There's voice recognition. There's, you know. So what this company has done is they've actually put together an app, as I said, that will open your camera. Mm-hmm. So it's looking at your blinking or your head movement so you can actually look at predetermined icons.
Okay.
And then obviously using the microphone, you can talk to the phone. I mean, not
cool.
even that. Like everyone said, oh, but we've got Siri and we've got this.
Does that mean
that
Stephen Hawking is going to sound more like Siri these days? That
well,
would be cool.
But that's the point, though.
Yeah.
Like if you take Siri and you take Google Assistant or what's the other one? Cortana,
yeah.
You know, you have to still push a button. Yeah. You have to still be able to actually activate it. These guys can't. Mm. So now it's totally voice controlled. So that's I just think it's nice that people are actually starting. I mean, apparently in the US alone, there are 5.6 million people that are totally paralyzed. I mean, that's an incredible number of people that have got no access to all the cool things that we've got. So now they can actually use a mobile device without lifting a finger.
It is
and
fantastic.
I didn't mean that as a pun. I mean, that was like, you know,
such a dick.
It's I'm actually reading a release.
I apologize on behalf of B1.
No, I was actually reading a release. Yeah. I think it's a fantastic thing.
Yeah.
So speaking of...
But it's great though, because technology is an enablement.
Supposed to be.
But that's the thing. Yeah. Yes. So technology is there to be an enabler for us, to help make life convenient. There are those of us that have, through some misfortune or the other, not able to use these things. And it's so great. Again, like GoPro giving us Quick, technology is starting to enable real useful things and creating access for people that
our guests today are a great example of that. When we turn their mics on just now, I mean, that's a great vein of
thought.
We're
talking
to the
guys that created Domestly.
Yes.
So looking forward to that. That's the app of the year, right?
MTN's app of the year.
Fantastic.
Yep. So we'll get to those guys just now. Apple tomorrow's got their MacBook event. So I kind of, you know, like you go to the rumors mills and all these things.
Yep. I did all of
that. So we know we're getting a MacBook Pro. Because it's been a while. So that will headline the show.
With just more USB-C ports.
No, well, here's the interesting thing. So some of the rumors that I came across that I thought were quite cool is one of the guys reckons we'll see fingerprint scanning.
Yep.
So for Apple Pay, you can actually pay off your device.
Yep. Biometrics.
I don't know if I would want that.
I don't
Most
think you
people
have a
choice.
Apple will dictate what you have.
Okay, so let me rephrase that. That wouldn't be the reason to buy it.
Yes, no.
And most MacBook users have an iPhone anyway, which means that they've got the fingerprint on their phone.
Yep. So with the convergence of iOS and it all coming together in one.
It was a rumor. Yep. Let's see. The other one which was cool was the OLED touch bar. Did you come across that one?
Removing the function keys.
Yes. So along the top would be an OLED. Yeah, so do I. And you just touch the bar and then like using force touch technology, a thing comes up and says, would you like to do this? Would you like to do that? So that one I'd like to see.
And they're talking about a fully black MacBook.
Ooh, that's sexy, yeah.
I mean, if we're just going to be completely aesthetic and
like that jet black from iPhone 7. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yo, that's really cool.
With backlight.
Then we're talking...
Who cares what it does? If it's matte black, I'm in. Go.
Now, you mentioned MacBook. You mentioned USB-C.
Yes.
Okay. I've actually got a message that's just come in from somewhere overseas asking what the link is for the show. Talk about USB-C while I reply to this, because I definitely can't think and type in at the same time. But what is your view on we've talked about USB-C on the show.
USB-C. Well, there's always this talk about the one I/O port that will end them all. And we thought that FireWire 400 was going to do it. We thought that FireWire 800 was going to do it. Then USB 2 turned into USB 3 and everybody was like, oh my goodness, it's blue. This is great. I still see the Silver Surfers trying to figure out which side of the USB to turn it up, and it always takes them a bit longer than most of us. If the holes are at the top, that's the top. But USB-C, I don't know.
Okay.
I really don't. It's more of an annoyance at this point than I can see a lot of the advantage. I think there's just so much out there. I see it as another way of Apple dictating accessory. I think Thunderbolt was doing a great job.
But it's not theirs, though, hey? I mean, USB-C is not theirs. And the MacBook has had that now. So I'm pretty sure. My question is, will there be more than one? Because
are we going to go to USB-D?
No, Man City. The biggest bugbear on the MacBook is that there's one port.
And it charges.
So it's a Pro, which means it has to have an HDMI or it has to have an SD. It has to have more slots.
No, there's talk of there being
But will they do
four.
Two or three
no, there's
USB?
There's talking about four USB-Cs on the MacBook
Now,
Pros.
That's just stupid. Okay.
And no
more
jack
adapters.
Ports. They're getting rid of the jack port on the MacBook as well.
Well, good for them. At least they're keeping that through. I'm not averse to
that. You're going to commit to something wrong, fail fast.
You do mean the guys straight away. Look, the Woz wasn't happy about it.
They're up against the Pixel these days. They've got to be careful what they do.
Yeah.
Google are coming to the party, and it's going to be really interesting. It's nice that Apple, I mean, they were kind of threatened by Samsung for a bit. Samsung. Some say that Samsung.
You mean they're still around?
But that blew up in their face, so we'll see how that goes.
In fact, at the airport, our Samsung Note 7 collection booths, because they've realized that some people in South Africa... Yeah, I was being polite. They've realized that some people in South Africa actually have brought one in.
And some guy in a bomb protection, Hurt Locker looking guy.
I'm laughing at the Grand Theft Auto gif that was going around. I was hurling them. You've got like all these weapons. Okay, so USB-C is given.
Yep.
We know that. You're saying potentially four. I'd much rather have two normal USBs. Yeah, it's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay, up to 2 terabytes of solid state. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
To have 2 terabytes on board.
They're probably still going to commit to their Fusion Drive with 2 SSDs, though. So,
yeah. Well,
That's what I think.
I mean, that's what's so nice about the rumors. It'll be nice to sit here next week and go, check, we told you.
Yeah.
But, okay, and then there was one of the rumor guys said, even though it's the MacBook event, they're expecting an iMac to be dropped, or iMacs. And the big thing on that would be the 5K display.
Yeah.
So that's quite cool.
And
because their displays are awesome.
I do like the displays. Ever since the HD Cinema got released, I still wish they had kept that look, that transparent look that they had when they first started with cinema displays.
But, yeah.
Things are going to be retro for a reason. But they're also talking about Apple TV, a cheaper version or a cheaper option of Apple TV. So
does that make sense, though?
I think it does. With the subscription services and the VOD stuff all happening, so you've got your TVOD. I see what you're saying.
So the $100 is a barrier. Yeah.
Well, they're going to get into the market.
Roku and Chromecast are like $30.
And
so
Netflix are going to drop a box. And
geez, Steve Jobs must be bloody spitting down there, huh, at 6 foot down. What these oaks are doing to his company.
I think Steve's on holiday. No, I agree. That oak needed a break. Shame.
The words that just came out of our mouth are cost cutting and all these things. And that's not something that's synonymous with Apple. It's just mad. So the person that actually reached out to me from overseas has logged in. He's like, Samsung Note 7 forever. Big shout out, Aria, but you got no chance, buddy. Hand it back and get yourself a proper phone.
I think you should read the news, buddy.
So you picked up on this one, Brett. Yep. I love this. The self-driving truck delivery.
Yes.
The first ever.
Otto.
Okay? Is that what it was called?
Otto, yeah.
So take me through the journey. What did it deliver and where? We know it wasn't Samsung phones because couldn't risk the thing blowing up on board.
So it was a truck full of beer, which I think is tremendous.
That's fantastic. I'm sold. I mean,
The first self-driven truck delivery was a shipment of beer. It was Anheuser-Busch. I mean, the guys that just bought out SAB and are now going to be in the country soon. They are testing self-driving cars.
Their beer's cuck, I'm sorry.
And it was with Uber.
Yeah, that's right.
So Uber bought the truck Otto, and there was a guy. It was quite funny because they interviewed the driver, and I'm inverted commas, the guy, the human that was getting driven around with all this cargo.
It's so funny that guys still in there, but they're not driving the vehicle.
He was able to do the, okay, we're at the gate now. Let's drive in and let's get to the service depot and the supply thing. And then once they're on the open road, he was there, and they're busy interviewing him in the back of the thing. He's like, wow, the truck actually did the lane merge better than I could have. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And you know when it's going to come through. I mean, it's all Uber space. So you've got your ETAs. You've got everything. I mean, is the beer cold in the back? Maybe. Maybe they've got some thermometers in the side. But it's great that they're looking at this for – it's not only going to be fuel economic. It's going to be time-saving. It's going to be as efficient as possible. And hopefully create less accidents, which means less spilt beer.
Which is good.
Which is always good.
I mean, that is always a good thing.
That's my biggest concern most mornings.
I'm just watching Tata's laughing here. It's like, your mic's off, but are you one of those guys that when you see the notification that a truck has crashed and you're on the highway grabbing keys, he's nodding his head. Yeah. All right. So AR, I have to get – last time was very VR-centric. Okay.
Yes.
I came across so much awesome AR stuff this week. So first of all, in East Harlem. So for anyone who doesn't know where Harlem is, it's in New York. And what they've done is they're trying to basically get Harlem to be uplifted. You know, they're gentrifying it. So what they've done is they've gone and they've looked for all this cool graffiti, but they've also encouraged guys to tag and start doing graffiti. And they've built the app. So when you hold your phone up, all the AR that comes to life from that trigger, from that artwork, tells you about the artist, tells you what the emotion was inside there, maybe the journey behind the artwork.
That's cool.
So it's like live art.
I'm glad that came to fore because we actually proposed that to a gallery a while back and it was just too ahead of the time.
We proposed it to Philadelphia about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, the same thing because they were tagging all over the place and they had a problem with graffiti. So we were saying rather tag electronically and then tell people just hold your phone up here and you'll see the stuff everywhere. You know,
I think what's happening as well is that like art galleries are like for the, I want to say the uber rich, but I mean, you got to have some disposable income to go to an art gallery and invest in some art. The problem is that there's so many more hipsters and millennials becoming the new rich.
Yeah.
And with very little appreciation for legacy art, how do you stay relevant with them? And that was what they were trying to do. And it's really cool that you create a space again for how these guys can engage and have access to art like this. And again, it's not disrupting, but it's amplifying what exists.
It's also drawing attention to the area, which hopefully brings revenue, which helps.
I'm talking more on the art side. But Harlem, yeah.
Cool.
It's Duden Ramberg.
So I have to actually kind of give Samsung a kudos here on my next one, because it's only one of their devices that sucks. But Surf Life Saving Australia and Samsung have put together a Pocket Patrol app. So what it does, you get to the beach, you hold up your phone, it shows you where the riptides are. It shows you if there's rocks under the water. So like if you're going to go out and swim, you're going to dive in. And then the lifeguards have a management app that sits on top of the back end. So if they've come across, like, I don't know, jellyfish are in the area or sharks or...
crowdsourced information for the beach.
They can put it in. But the point is you can just hold up your phone, have a look and see. And you can tell your kids, don't go swim there. There's a rip current or, you know.
Yeah.
So I thought that was just really good way of using augmented reality. You know, it's practical. You got your phone on the beach. Staying with the good, brain surgery. Now, we've spoken briefly about medical before and you know, the leaps and bounds. But the brain is still something that humans can't figure out. I mean, our doctors, they just don't get there. So these two neurosurgeons and an engineering student, funny enough, and we have an engineering student with us as well, they're using AR to map out brain patterns. So what they do is they take the scan, your head scan, then they augment it, and then they can use that as a reference point when they're actually performing
the
surgery.
Stick the needle
in
there.
Okay. So they're getting a lot more detailed data in the theater with them using an augmented overlay.
Yeah. Fantastic.
To finish up on the AR side, unfortunately, it's a bad thing. So we actually have a threat to the augmented reality growth. It's actually coming out of the EU. And what they're basically doing is the EU's got different policies when it comes to freedom of panorama. That's their quote. So the right to take photos or film footage of buildings, sculptures, and other works of art in public spaces without authorization from the artist or architect is problematic.
Yeah.
And this actually came to the front with the whole Pokemon Go story. You know, these guys were running around taking pictures and they're referring to art. They were saying, like, that's the Pokemon stop or whatever the thing is.
Yeah.
And we're getting to shit for it.
Yeah.
Now, if they go ahead and do that, okay, they could effectively cause geo-blocking on every product that comes out, which actually limits the whole concept of augmented reality. So we might find an industry that actually comes dead in its tracks based on an EU ruling. So it's definitely something to watch, because all great to innovate, whatever, but it's not something I would have thought of if I did a campaign. Mm. You know, so anyway, that was...
We're just Brexit again, and then they can't control us.
Cool. I really don't want to run away with time today. So, I mean, I've got lots of like other cool stuff there, which I'm actually going to leave. But the one thing I do want to mention, because we're talking about IoT.
Yes.
IoT in the Napa Valley, and it's relevant because our guests have just got back from Silicon and they're going back there again. But this to me was brilliant. So for anyone who doesn't know IoT yet, just turn off, go home, you know, off you do. So basically, these guys have said water's a problem, okay? The whole world is in a problem with trying to find water.
Yeah.
So they've wrapped copper coils around the vines. And these vines, these coils are linked. The actual vines are in the vineyards, the grapevines. And they're linked to sensors. And what they do is the copper can work out if the vines are moist or dry.
Okay.
If they're moist, they don't turn on the sprinklers, whether it's been predetermined or not.
Wow.
If they dry, they do. And also it then links to the internet to look at a weather pattern to see if there is forecast for rain. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're not overwatering. They're still managing and they're using tech to do it.
No, that's fantastic.
So if, when you guys get back there next week, you know, maybe just...
you can have a glass of wine with no ice.
You need to just go to the Napa Valley just to see it. So I think on that note, let's turn some mics on. Let's get these guys chatting. So we have got Tato and Berno from Domestly. Hello, guys.
Good afternoon. Hello.
How's it going? So, you know, I thought, Brett, I mean, we chatted about this before the show, but the reason I wanted to get you guys on, and we are going to blow some smoke up your butts, you were the winners of the MTN App of the Year Award. Okay, yeah. I mean, I don't know where my button is for applause anymore. Hello, Mr. Producer on the other side of the window. Can I have a clap button, please? So that's fantastic. I was actually privileged to be there that night. And it was there and then that I've actually been trying to get the meeting with you guys or the interview. And we're talking, what, 3 months now?
It was about 2 months ago. Yep.
Three months.
It was the beginning of August that the event happened,
All right. So, I mean, awesome, guys. Well done. So, you know, take us through Domestly. I think if anyone knows the product, you probably do, I should hope. So
I should hope so, yeah. Yes. So Numestly is an app. It's much like the Uber concept, where it's an app that you can use to book domestic cleaners in your area. So basically what we do is we go behind the scenes and we find the best and screened and trusted cleaners in your area. We put them through a process. We put them through a tech enabling process or teaching how to use Google Maps and everything. We put them on the Numestly app, and you as a consumer or you as a business can then look for cleaners or trusted cleaners in your area, and you can book them every week what you want to. So that's really what Numestly is. It's a website, numestly.com, and it's also an app on iOS as well as on Android.
Okay, I'm so glad he started with iOS. Did you see that? Like iOS first. On that note,
you need a high five just for getting it into the iOS store.
Yeah, it's also true. Yeah. But now that you've walked the shoes of an app builder, do you build for Apple first or do you build for Android first?
You build for Android first. You've got to, the typical iOS customer is very loyal. I must tell them that. If you look at the download rates, it's for iOS, it's really high, which means it's a very loyal customer. But the masses are still Android.
Sure.
From our users, about 80% Android, 20% iOS at this stage.
All right, but I mean, your app's native anyway, so you're obviously native. Built. All right, so there's obviously reasons why people choose winners in life, and I think the most important thing, and I mean, I know we've got listeners all over the world. But the point is that in South Africa, job creation is crucial. You know, we really do have a high unemployment rate. We have a high uneducated rate. And if these stupid students just don't go back to varsity soon, they're going to be joining it. Oh, you might actually have some stock coming in. Huh? I've got a 2 year of my 3 year BCom, and I burnt my varsity down. Can I come in garden or something like that? But, you know, but jokes aside, you know, going back to the seriousness of it, and that's, I think, why you guys were acknowledged and obviously awarded accordingly. You're solving a real problem. So you're not actually, and let me differentiate a real problem. A real problem is not when some rich woman wakes up in the morning and finds a domestic worker can't come in and she's got a nail appointment.
You're crying over
spilled milk. Yeah. Oh, gosh, I might actually have to clean and break a nail. We're talking about a real problem. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a lot of people that are looking for work. Mm-hmm. And we've also got people that are looking for people to help them but don't know where to start and the trust. Take us through the Numestly journey. Mm-hmm. You know, it brings people together, that's fine. But what do we do? How does it work? What's the interface on the domestic worker side? And what's the interface on customer side? Mm-hmm.
So what's so excellent about it is literally what happens.
You're allowed to say that it's yours.
Yeah. What happens in the background, that's where the kind of the resources and the operations really happen. So when it comes to the client as well as the service provider interface, it's really seamless. So as you know, behind the scenes, we got a whole recruiting team, we're scouting, we're really spending time and interviewing and identifying, doing background checks and making sure that we are identifying what we call the best of the best domestic workers. So that when you as a customer, when you eventually now go onto the app, it's as easy as, you know, listing which area you particularly stay in, deciding when you would require the services. And what really comes up is a whole short list of cleaners that are available in your area. The geniuses, as we talked about, is they're all vetted, screened, background checked, rating, reviews for credibility and all of that. And literally all you do is book, select whoever kind of resonates with you based on what you're looking to do. And then payments happen on the app or on the platform and ready to go.
Well, that's one of the great things about these kinds of apps. I mean, we've got Airbnb and we've got Uber and all these things. It's great that it's convenient, yeah. But a lot of the times you've got to also answer the security questions and concerns. So the fact that you can connect cleaners to people is one thing. The fact that you can connect trusted cleaners to busy people is the way you've answered the question
next
even
level
more. And I think that's really important. That, I mean, we've had Uber scares with safety, and you're letting people into your home. You're letting people you've never met before into your private places. Yeah. So a big thing that you've addressed, and I think you guys have done it fantastically well, and you've got a pretty awesome background check. At the same time, you're enhancing, you're creating jobs.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about kind of disruption was a bit of a theme that was coming on, and we look at the industry that we play in, it has looked the same for a really long time. There hasn't been any change in how a cleaner's earning potential is. There hasn't been any change in terms of how upliftment or any of those cases are. So for us coming into it, how do we actually really kind of shake things up and, you know, bring new rules and new behaviors to the game. And exactly as you're saying, Britt, now bringing all of these things together happens now on the, you know, on the app. Yeah.
So I'm going to pick back up on that, but we're talking about paying the bills. I mean, you're helping domestic workers pay the bills. I need to pay the bills. So I'm just going to quickly go off to an ad break and we'll be back straight afterwards.
This is CliffCentral.com.
When you're growing a small business, meetings, telecons, and admin move into dinners, recitals, and bedtime stories. But we know you knew that. We know that between the successes and failures, the courage to continue is what counts. We also know that the right meetings, telecons, and admin means better dinners, recitals at the school you want, and great bedtime stories. The courage to grow is business. We've got the advisors, products, and solutions that enable you to do so. MTN Business, a new world of business.
If you've just joined us, welcome back to the Futurology Show, proudly sponsored by MTN Business. And we are sitting here talking to the MTN App of the Year award winners from Domestly.
We've got Berno and Tato. Berno, this is what your voice sounds like.
Hi there.
And Tato?
Hello there.
There you go.
Hello there.
It's a radio show after all. Nobody knows what you guys, how handsome you look, but we can hear you quite well. If you'd like to join the conversation, we are tweeting a lot about Domestly, and we're going to be tweeting a lot about disruptive business and how it changes the future of what we're doing, as well as innovation. You can follow us on Twitter. It's at cliffcentral.com, #Futurology, and we're on there, so just follow us, and we'll go from there. But follow Domestly, follow us.
Yeah.
Join the conversation.
So before we went off to the break, we were talking about how you know, how we bring people together and all those good things. Brett, you hit the nail on the head. The biggest problem that we have here, and I'm sure this is the thing that's probably been your biggest FAQs, is the trust issue. You know, I've had a couple of incidences over time where things have been stolen or even worse, you know. That's got to be probably when you guys sat down with your whiteboard and your little stickies and your coffee and beer and Red Bull and all those things. That had to be the first problem, and it's obviously still something that resonates today.
Definitely.
So take us through the journey, because I mean, vetting and all that stuff, you know, what's the degree of comfort that I'm getting?
So when we started initially, the plan was, you know, like, let's create this app. What is the plan? Can we open it up to everybody? Can we open it up to everywhere in South Africa? And what we found is that if we do that, we take away the whole trust element of the platform. So you won't have then the trust behind everything. So we decided to have a city-by-city approach, and that's what we opted for. And therefore, it's a much more resource-intensive process, requiring a lot more interviews and screening. But at the end of the day, I think that's where the magic is behind Domestly. It's to making sure that the people that you are letting into your home is trusted. They've been in front of different people, not other like homeowners as well, but as well as in front of us. We've interviewed them, we've done the background checks, and we've done some even on doing criminal checks on them. So that's really where the magic is.
Yeah, and it's something that we absolutely do not compromise on. You know, as you talk about right at the beginning, we knew this was something that no matter what, no matter how quickly we scale, no matter how quickly we grow, we will not compromise on it. And it is still today something we look at every single time, where at certain areas we have a supply problem, right? Because we have people still going through the process. We're waiting for the checks to come back. You know, one could easily say, let's just plug the domestic workers onto the platform, but we will and refuse to compromise on things like the quality and the checks and all of that. And that really goes a long way into really sustaining and maintaining that the trust element that we have really built over the while.
Look, you're obviously doing it right. And we were talking off air, but you've now created, what's it, just over 700?
Just over 700 sustainable jobs on the platform.
And this in a period of?
It's just a year. We launched in October, October last year.
I mean, that's incredible.
So we only launched in Johannesburg in June. So in the last few months, we've grown Johannesburg, and we've created a couple of hundred jobs in Johannesburg as well. And our aim is to add another 1,500 jobs on the platform in the next 12 months.
That's fantastic. Have well you, done.
I'm always intrigued, because basically you're exactly like an Uber or an Airbnb, etc. You know, you're a conduit, you're a gateway, and it's fluid and it's awesome and all those sexy things. But have you actually been to like someone's home and watched the initial? Because I'm picturing myself in this position. So I'm sitting there in my sleeping shorts. The doorbell rings and someone's there, and I'm like, who are you? Oh, but wait, you booked me on the app.
You know, can't, I mean? Like, vet all of the connected people.
I mean, we could actually, I'm seeing like a Suzanne DIY type comedy thing here. Like, who are you, bro? You know, like, yeah. So how does that happen? Because you're actually creating a new relationship. I mean, you're bringing two people together. Yes, it's an employer-employee, mm-hmm. but you're in your home. It's intimate.
Definitely. And what we see as well is the type of person that comes to Domestly and the type of, you know, cleaner, that relationship is a lot more respected than what you would normally find out there. You have these people that, you know, really want to help cleaners, want to uplift them, want to help them by using the platform. So,
and as very much as we are, you know, on demand, you book, you know, whenever the need comes in, we really see ourselves at the facilitator of these relationships. So we are actually doing connections. And that's something that's so fundamental to our process as well, in terms of when we're screening the actual service providers. You know, you want to get that feel. You know, somebody knocks on your door, you know, the moment they say hello, what's that feeling you get? And that's the type of stuff we try manage, and the type of stuff we try to create in the customer's home. Mm. So simple things like that, it's really kind of keeps things exciting for us. And
the great thing as well, I mean, innovation is about continuous improvement as well. And you've not just innovated a disruptive access model, you've also created a way that domestic workers can actually continuously improve on their own. They're accountable for their own level of service because they get rated at the end of it, which in sort of the traditional way of hiring domestic workers, you don't generally have like, oh, here's a gold star for Maria today. You've got, how does it work out? And it's sometimes a difficult discussion to have for employee versus domestic. So you've created this very easy to accept way of working, both for the employee, I suppose, or the homeowner, as well as the domestic worker, which is great. I mean, it's only going to create continuous improvement throughout the industry.
Definitely. And what we're seeing with the rating and reviews on the platform is some cleaners are, you know, is the cleaner set their own rates on our platform? Is that some
You're stealing my thunder. I was going to ask you how this works, but yeah, carry on.
So different cleaners based on different areas and their own experience put different rates on the platform. So we help advise, and our team advisors in particular, just to help them. But what you would see is a cleaner getting continuous five-star reviews. She's a professional cleaner. That's what she does for a full-time living. So for her, it really takes ownership and pride into the work, and it helps her that the more ratings she gets, the more jobs she completes, the more she can increase her price. So it really enables her. It's a profession for her.
And that element where we're actually focusing on the clean and how they do things differently. I mean, you know, never before has a cleaner been asked, when are you available? How much do you want? Yeah. And so these questions, even they come through our doors and said, how much are you going to charge for your service? They literally look at us blank. We're like, what do you mean? You know, name your price. And so this from that part of the market, it's really exciting to see how they're now operating as brands, because they know I'm going to be rated and reviewed after this. And this has a really direct impact on my earning potential, how I grow. So that's exciting stuff.
So, I mean, this basically goes, Brett, we've spoken about this before. People want to be acknowledged. Yeah. You know, it's the same. You mentioned it with your Uber rating.
Yeah.
You got a fancy car fetch you because you're a five-star guy. I get booted because I'm a one-star kind of guy. It's the same for your...
I get picked up in Maseratis. You get picked up in Chevy Sparks.
Yeah, exactly. Not even.
Because your rating, it matters, guys. It matters. Don't piss off the Uber driver.
But, you know, the thing is that these people, it's not just about the money. There's a pride element. They also realize that if they do something wrong, it's kind of listed.
Accountability.
Yeah, the accountability is there. But what I wanted to find out, and this is something that, you know, I'm sure you've addressed it. What happens with regards to Labor Relations Acts? Because effectively, you know, you're creating employment, because I know you also said that a lot of your jobs are actually repeat jobs. So you're creating a relationship between myself and a specific domestic worker. You're coming every Tuesday, or you're coming every Tuesday and Thursday, or whatever it is. I'm not employing them because the app is sitting in between. Is that right? Or, you know, take me through that journey.
No, definitely. So the whole experience about Domestly is that you can use it without worrying about any labor law implications, especially being, you know, UIF and all these type of things.
Sure.
So that's what we want to take care of, and we take care of in the back end for the customer and for the business itself. But the labor law does protect, you know, the labor law in South Africa is very strong. It's very
Correct.
Strict in terms of UIF and all these type of things. So it is something there. So we start as you know, the whole Uber concept where it's on-demand contractors that work for this particular person. But what we've actually progressed into is we're actually employing some of the cleaners full-time now, because we realize, you know, that cleaners not all of them want to work on demand. Not all of them want to work, you know, just twice a week. Some of them actually, you know, want a full-time job. And that's what we're doing now. We're employing them full-time. We're giving them that sustainability on our platform. So we try and listen as much as what we can and wherever possible on the cleaners' needs and try and adjust it for them on the platform as well.
So that would effectively mean that they would be your employees. You would do the rate accordingly, which would give you the margin, but then obviously manage their time and their scheduling.
So we're trying to grab, I guess, two elements of the market. So as Bernard talks about, those that necessarily don't operate on the or get excited about daily on a daily basis going to different people, you know, we lock them in and we take them on as employees. But the other element that still operate on demand, I think part of our due diligence when we started Domestly, we actually spent quite a heavy amount of money in terms of legal costs and just seeking legal counsel. And all of these touch points to ensure that, you know, from a customer who's booking somebody on demand and don't have to worry about these employment or labor implications or regulatory implications, we carefully make sure that we build that into the app in terms of the level of influence we have. So we don't have much influence. We give influence to the cleaner who decides where they work. They decide, do they going to show up, how much they earn. So literally the power is in the domestic workers court, and we are that platform and that facilitator.
It's intriguing. Brett, you had a question or comment there?
Just a bit of a direction change. It's always interesting. I mean, you're on the Futurology show. We're looking at the future of things. And you guys are changing, very much disrupting traditional manners of doing things. You didn't wake up one day and say, I'm going to disrupt domestic service.
No, definitely not. It's a gradual process. It started slow. It started with unemployment for myself, actually.
Okay.
Do you want me to tell the
Can
background?
I jump in there quickly? Sorry, we're definitely changing direction now. So I mentioned that I went to the MTN app of the Year Award where the guys won. And I mean, it was like piranhas around these oaks. You can imagine. They just won. You got a great check, got a trip to Silicon. We're going to get to that now as well, because that's where your future comes into it. But I was talking to your mom, Benno. You know, all the moms were downstairs like glowing, you know, like, that's my boy. In fact, I think it was your mom.
I have no idea what they've done, but it's
that's
amazing.
My boy. Yeah, well, exactly that. So the story goes as follows. I'm sorry, I think it's quite cool. I was talking to Berno's mom, okay, and she was saying to me, you know, I wanted to kill him when he first told me about this. He's studying at university and he wants to chuck it in to build an app. So you're kind of showing in that statement exactly what you said. They don't know what an app is.
I have an app idea, and app developers are the new musicians of the 21st century, I suppose.
And you know, the thing is, all you have to do is show Uber or any of these net worth. That's an app, mom.
Yeah.
But it takes a while. I think until she gets the first press mention that she says wide over Facebook, until then.
Well, that's what happened that night.
That's exactly
what
happened.
She told me that was you 6 months ago. Now she wants to run up there with a banner and hug you. You know,
exactly.
Like, that's my son. There we go. You know, so, yeah.
But I think especially, you know, like our parents in the older generation, they grow up with such a set way of doing things.
Yeah.
You know, go to university, finish school, find yourself a job, go in a corporate, work 20 years until you retire. And we, as this millennial age, grow up in a different type of way. We want to do things differently. And I think for her, it was a big shock. You know, I studied engineering at university, and not going into the engineering field, doing something totally different. It was a big adjustment. But I think after seeing what difference it's making in the lives out there, and seeing, you know, the good about it, I think she's getting on board with it. But it takes time. And I think everyone else that's deciding to do this will definitely get the same type of hassle from their family, because it's frowned upon. It's different.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're talking about moving forward.
I need to move backwards so we can. I really want to hear the story of how, because innovation comes from a bed of lack, or necessity is the mother of invention. You're almost homeless because your mum's pissed off with you. You dropped out of university and you don't have a job. So this
she
is
didn't
the point
speak
of
to him for months.
This is the point of inspiration and creation.
Exactly.
For what
so I finished
domestic.
University. I actually graduated with an engineering degree
in chemical engineering.
And then I went home, and it was a holiday period, and I applied for 150 jobs, and I couldn't find anybody. I did not get one interview, and I thought, what the hell am I going to do now? And my cleaner was working for the family at that time. She was working for the past 10 years. Didn't have any more open. She needed more days in the week to fill, and really started as a need of, you know, like, how can we help people like her. And then we started experimenting and seeing what we can get right. And I built a very basic website at the time and put her up and what two of her other friends on the website to see if it'll work. And in the first day, we got bookings. And that's really where the idea started. And, you know, it's
what did you call it back then?
It was maid service.
Oh, just maid service. Yeah. .co.za.
Yes, exactly. So it was very basic. And then we transferred and we launched and we did it properly. I then did it full time and I got a co-founder in Tartu on board and we got some great investors and we really built out the company. But it takes a very long time. It's a lot of hard work.
Yeah. And Tato, you're not an app developer either.
No, far from it.
You studied?
Yeah, so I did a BCom. I did management sciences with a finance and investment focus, and then got into the corporate world and worked as a senior executive headhunter, and then ended up in Domestly.
Okay. I love these stories.
Yeah, this is the meat of these great things. Everybody's like, oh, wow, overnight success. You guys must have planned this.
Yeah, well, I mean, I hope not our parents, well, we know our parents listening, otherwise we wouldn't have four members of an audience. But if we had said this back then, like we're not going into finance after you've just paid for all those years of study.
Yeah.
We're actually going to go and, I mean, back then it was probably like...
Well, it's nice to have a lot of money behind you in order to have finance or finance to manage the money, but...
But I was just saying, you've just gone to Silicon Valley, okay? And I want to talk about that because these guys have seen stuff that we haven't seen, you know, or most people that haven't been fortunate enough to go and see. Take us through that. You're two young guys. You've just won.
So as part of the whole MTN package, it was an all-expensive paid trip to the US.
Was it business class or economy?
No, it was economy.
Oh, you see, then it...
It was really nice hotels.
No, they really took care of us really well.
So we spent time in San Francisco. We went to TechCrunch, which is one of the biggest technology conferences in the world.
Yep.
We got to see... Yes, exactly. Yep. It was some amazing founders and speakers there. Some of the people there were... like Rudolf Buerto, who's an ex-South African who heads up Sequoia Capital, was there. Then also...
Did you get his card?
No. But I've got his email
address. You've got to kick your finance partner's butt, yeah. I mean, hello, there's the money, guys.
So we got to see like really some interesting chats and, you know, what these top investors and top minds in the world are doing and what they're focusing on next. So we got to meet and chat to one of the guys who's behind the Hyperloop One, Elon Musk's project. We got to speak to a guy called George Hotz, who's designing the first self-powered device that you can plug into a car that will self-drive the car. And he's trying to do that. And he's a 26-year-old guy. And we got to speak some...
Gee, that's old in this day and age.
We're 26. Yeah. And so the minds and the concepts and the people are dreaming big, and it's really inspiring to bring it back home.
I think one of the things that really stood out for me was just exactly that on that dreaming big. It's you know, the ideas that they're focusing on, it's really like for the future. You know, a lot of the times, particularly locally, we take Domestic as a prime example. You know, we're solving real issues, solving debt, but they are literally building a future. You kind of... got to take some time to map it out. Like, how long is this gonna map out of? And like talking about things for 20 years to come and all of these things, and it's really inspiring. They're really literally building the future.
So let's talk about the future. How do we
on a futurology show?
No way.
Stop me in my tracks. Okay,
give me something to throw. So how do we take? Because you've just hit the nail on the head. You know, when I first looked at the app, and I thought, wow, you guys you haven't solved. Okay, we haven't got world peace, we haven't got rid of ISIS, and you haven't solved the unemployment crisis.
October, bro. Just give him a couple more months.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He needs a few more months. Yeah. But the point is, you're taking the steps in the right direction, and when things work and they fly, boy, do they fly, which you're seeing and living yourselves. Okay. But how does this evolve into like a first world country, like Silicon Valley? Are you already having those chats? Is it too early to have those chats? You can't say that you're having those chats. I mean... You know, you went all the way there. There was a reason. One, maybe to get some cash and you know, VC funding, which is the right place to go. But how does Domestly live in other markets, or is it too early to talk about that?
I think, for instance, you also mentioned at the top of our conversation that we'll be going back to Silicon Valley in about a week and a half now.
I hate you.
And, that's part of exactly how do we bring these two worlds together. So for us, it's all about the learnings. You know, there's a lot of stuff that we can really take in terms of how they approach and how they look at problems and how they tackle it. So we've got the real life understanding what it means to be on the ground and consumer behavior and all of these things. And now the next thing is, how do we draw on these learnings in terms of scaling, being applicable in other environments? And that's exactly what this trip is about now, to really sit with people that have done this in different parts of the world and from developing nations to first world countries. How do we bridge that gap? And that's what we want to do. And that's what we're trying to actually start working on today and start coming towards that future where we can really scale beyond our borders.
I mean, I suppose, you know, it's a question, but I can think of answers straight away. Even like the fact that you guys are evolving into like small business cleaning environments. So you're talking about commercial or corporate engagements, you know. So effectively the model works, whether you're bringing someone to a private residence or you're bringing a team to a physical office. I mean, offices all over the world. And you've been to Citicone, you've seen how it works, where these guys work in these co-environments where, you know, they kind of have to bring their own stuff, do their stuff, clean their stuff and get out. You know, that would be a
sharing
perfect
economy. No, like, I think a very important point to mention is that, you know, going there and, or taking a concert from there to plug in here is a very different thing. You've got so many different dynamics happening on the ground, and you know, even as Dumaisley is a type of first world app, there's a lot of problems you've got to solve, and there's a lot of African solutions you've got to find. And I believe that African problems will be solved by Africans. It won't be solved by Americans. It won't be solved by first world countries, because it's so unique.
Well
said. How far away are we from a Dumaisley worker being dropped off at an Airbnb with
Uber?
With Uber.
We want to try it.
Wow.
I mean, like...
No, yeah. Well, you actually... Uber opened,
the disruptive ecosystem.
Uber opened up the API. So we could potentially, theoretically, we can have a booking and we could send the cleaner's API. We can send it via Uber API and tell the cleaner you get picked up there. But that all comes down to the economics. So we want to make it as affordable as possible. And if we had to add that extra feature, maybe some person will want to pay for it. So it could be an option.
They clean the back of the Uber while they're on their
way. But you know, you're sitting here making that statement, and and the cogs are going around in my mind. That's not far away.
Because it's next week. What are you talking about? When they come back from Silicon Valley, it's happening.
I'm saying, whether they make it happen or not, if I go and stay in an Airbnb, part of that contract is I do have to clean it or opt for their cleaning options. I mean, they specify that in the terms.
The domestic drone delivery service. I mean, take it to new heights. Come on, guys.
By their head, or being carried by the scruff of their neck.
But that's the thing. I mean, one of the great things about disruptive business or innovative business is that we have this freedom to dream. They don't have to become a reality yet. But the fact that we're all dreaming of a better tomorrow, a new way of doing things, a better way of doing things, and not confined by the traditional thinking of the past, is why we have businesses like Dumaisley, why you get to go to Silicon Valley and find other people that, yes, they've got a 20-year plan, but their 20-year plan is like everybody else's 100-year plan. It's just got a really fast timeline.
And the exciting thing is through that discovery process, that's when you start picking up on new things and new stuff that can get implemented today or, you know, in a couple of months' time. And that makes it all really interesting,
Yeah.
So you're going back to Silicone, you must be going to look at VC guys. If you're not allowed to say it, that's fine, but I'm assuming.
We are as well, but it's a very unique experience. I think, you know, to go there and expect to get funding from these VC guys back there, it's not really realistic. You know, as Tatu said, the top venture capitals in the world are interested in looking at funding the next big thing. They're looking at 20 years ahead.
For the billion people.
Yeah. They're not looking, you know, as hard as it is, they're not looking at Africa. They're not looking...
Which is so weird, because there's a billion people.
Exactly,
here.
But that's like why exactly what I'm saying is that, you know, the billion people in Africa will be tapped by Africans sitting here. Yes. It won't be tapped by VCs sitting in Mountain View. Yeah. And that's why it's very important for us to cultivate this culture of entrepreneurship and, you know, to grow this entrepreneurship thing here locally so we can tackle Africa.
I want to stay with Africa, okay, because it definitely is a future. We have a billion people. Yes, mm-hmm. We have a billion people that don't have money, but there are still a billion people.
They all have needs.
And I'm using it because of the app. Has that been a challenge for
Definitely.
You?
Definitely. It's been probably the biggest challenge we've ever had.
I was just thinking in my head, like my domestic worker doesn't have a smart device.
So when we launched, we built an app for the client. We built an app for the customer, for the cleaner. But you can imagine data being as ridiculous as it is. Cell phone reception being...
Hashtag data prices must fall.
Data must fall,
So what we then did is we got cell phone contracts and gave 30 cleaners cell phone contracts. And the way we found that, you know, that they don't have cell reception. Langa in Cape Town or Khayelitsha has the crappiest cell reception ever, so they would never get the notifications coming through. So I think Africa's got very unique challenges, and that's what I'm saying.
So you'd have situations where a booking request goes out and the domestic worker has no idea about it. Why? Because they're in a settlement and their network reception there is... There's nothing. So those are the type of unique challenges, and I think we've kind of found our ways around it as well, and which is...
So I was going to ask, using like a USSD or an SMS
In Africa, SMS still works.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, and we've had the we recently had the Gartner Symposium, the Aspiring Innovators, as well on the show. And I mean, there was guys making headway in a lot of those problem areas that you have. So while you guys are solving one problem, the nice thing is that as a community of problem solvers, there's someone else solving another problem.
Exactly.
So that's why collaboration is so important. Mm-hmm. I think so many people start to think that I need to study BSc IT or something so I can go and put my biscuit to good use and actually go and make the next best app. But the guys
put your biscuit to good use.
Yeah, BSCIT, biscuit. Think about it. Tick tick. So if you go and put those kind of guys, and they start following a traditional path of success dictated to by generations before us, we don't find the answers to the generations of tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that we have to collaborate with other problem solvers means that we actually start to make a huge impact on society.
Definitely. Like, for instance, you get the free Wi-Fi project, Project Isizwe, here in Johannesburg and Gauteng. Yeah. I mean, something like that is amazing. It not just helps, you know, people connecting, but it also helps us. We've got cleaners who's now got access to technology, who's got access to jobs because of that. So it's all about the collaborating around solving this problem as a whole, as a society.
And if Elon hadn't blown up Facebook's satellite, we'd have a lot more of that free stuff flowing around. Again, we need Africans to solve Africans' problem because we let these two Yanks cock it. Well, no, he was an African. Elon's from South Africa, but he cocked it up. But you're talking about collaborations, okay? I'm sitting here thinking there are so many opportunities that come together. Have you started working on some collaborations? You know, like, I'll elaborate. Like, Uber has got Uber Eats now. And they take food to you wherever you go, which means that there's a restaurant collaboration. Mm. And I looked at the back end of that. That tech's pretty sick. I mean, they've really got, but they've also got gazillions of billions of dollars. Are you guys working on anything at the moment, or?
We are looking at different types of things. You know, we're looking at, you know, what's our customer and what's the value that we can add to them. So, like, we're adding, for instance, we're adding cleaning subscriptions where you can have a cleaner on a set schedule every week, and you can also have cleaning products on top of that. So it's kind of like a subscription you do it once off and you never have to worry about it ever again. And every week the cleaner rocks up at the same time and she gives you cleaning products as well. So there's a lot of stuff like that that we can do and we're thinking about.
That's where I was going. I was like, straight away I could just see someone coming, and like a Unilever would get behind something like that as well.
Exactly.
Because it's brand placement. I mean, you're coming into people's homes. Yeah. If it's not the phone, the home is the next sacred place to get to communicate to people. So, all right. Brett, I don't know if there's anything from your side.
It's always something, I'm sure.
No, I know. I mean specifically on the domestic app. I mean, we're already at the top of the hour again. It's... I'm faster than an Uber delivery truck with beer.
Yes, thank you, Uber Eats. I made 37 rand by using Uber Eats last week. I got my lunch delivered to me, and I made 37 rand. It was awesome.
How does that work?
They give you 100 bucks.
Well, they gave me
your referrals.
So we're in Beta in the Bryan scenario, and I actually managed to get my order delivered to me, but they got the order wrong.
Hold
with the
on
drink,
a second.
So they gave me a 50 rand voucher and a 100 rand voucher that I used to buy it in the first place.
Wow. I have to still interrupt it. He's the boss. He tells all the staff, you will download the app, so he gets the credits. I mean, it's like...
Not everybody jumped on that bandwagon, I must
say. You tried.
I might tweet it just now and see how that happens. But no, I think I'm always inspired by South African innovation and African innovation, actually. And I really do believe that we have unique problems in Africa. The thing that helps me not panic my life away is that there are always more solutions than there are problems. And with people like Tato and Berno solving domestic work service and other things that I'm sure are going to spin out of this, it's really encouraging to say to guys, like, if you don't know what to do, just apply your brain. A little bit of thing and make it meaningful. There are so many guys trying to find the next fluff piece.
Exactly. I think, you know, being here, there's so many problems, and, you know, where there's problems, there's potential solutions.
Yes.
I think when you ask any of the big VCs and especially South African investors, like, for instance, the guys like Alan or Craig, when you ask him where's the best place to be in this world if you're 20 or something, they want to do something, it's in South Africa. It's in Africa.
Yeah.
Because here's where you can actually have big problems you can solve. Where there's problems, there's solutions you can
exactly.
tap into.
I think my challenge then on the back is, rather than a wrap-up thought, my challenge is to the financial institutions and investors out there that there's new business. Some of the best billions to be made in the future have not yet become a company yet. And it's with your help and assistance and understanding what this is that we're actually trying to answer needs rather than just trying to make the next best thing because of the next best thing. There's actually a need attached to what these solutions are. So investors, banks, if you're out there, listen to startups, listen to agile business,
and especially corporates,
and move with them.
Especially corporates. I think corporates need to partner with startups more.
Yes.
You know, South Africa is very unique where you've got a number of players that control the whole economy.
Exactly.
You need to move quicker. You need to partner with startups because that's really where you've got agility and you can make a difference.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, I'll have the concluding thought of the day then based
cool.
on that.
Here's the bus.
I was watching Shark Tank, you know, the local version, yep. and I love the show. But I need to kick all of them in the ass because exactly what you've just said, every time someone's come on into the Shark Tank, look, there's been some crap. Okay, let's just be honest, but that's what TV's about. But guys have gone in with concepts or ideas or they're like at the alpha stage and all these idiots are, I'm not investing in it because it's not investable because it doesn't exist yet. You know, you're putting a value. Well, that's the rules of the freaking show. You have to come in with a value. And yeah. the guy's saying, I'm giving you 50% for 50 yeah. grand. And your answer is, but how do you get to that PV?
You can't have a case study for bleeding edge innovation.
Yeah. I mean, that's just it. So I'll wrap up with that. Guys, well done. I mean, yeah. as I said, I've been quite excited about getting on the show, yeah. given the Thanks fact so that MTN Business sponsors our yeah. show as
and
well.
Looking forward and, to having you guys back on the show to tell us more about your Silicon
Valley
trip.
Definitely. Yeah. Stay in contact and all the digital channels. So yeah, the website last time, domestly.com.
And all also right. Domestly app on Android and iOS.
Fantastic. You see, you did Android and iOS.
Follow the
iOS
tweets if you're
Android
lost as well.
All right, so that's a wrap again for us, and thanks to MTN Business for sponsoring us.
And thanks for listening.
And thanks for listening. Until next time, keep your screens clean and your knobs shiny. CliffCentral.com.